Our topic again is why the political left and radical Islam are not strange bedfellows. Now, if you consider those two groups, the former, the political left, is secular and libertine. The latter, radical Islam, is religious and legalistic. So why do two groups with such different worldviews support each other's causes? For example, why do political liberals complain about women's rights and homosexual rights in America, but they support the Muslim Brotherhood in the Middle East who treat women as second-class citizens and homosexuals even worse? Why do radical Muslims who want to implement Sharia law all over the world support liberal politicians and policies in the West who have the opposite of Sharia law? Could it be that the political left and radical Islam have a uniting cause greater than their differences? Well, today in the program, Mark Durie, who's an Australian pastor, theologian, author, and an expert in Islam, he recently came to America to do a speaking tour where he spoke about the partnership of radical Islam with leftist politics, and he joins us today in the program. I spoke recently with him, and here's the first part of that interview with Mark Durie. And welcome back to the Christian Worldview, Mark.
Thanks, David. It's great to be with you again.
Well, you've been on a speaking tour here in America the last couple weeks, and you're hitting cities like New York and Boston, Atlanta and Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. And you're speaking on a number of different topics, all having to do with Islam, which has been the focus of some of your books. I want to read a portion from your speech on the partnership of radical Islam and leftist politics. I'm going to refer to that speech quite a bit today. You say at the beginning, Geert Wilders, leader of the Netherlands Party for Freedom, came to Melbourne, Australia. His speaking engagement was opposed by demonstrators mainly from radical left organizations such as the Marxist Social Alternative and the United Struggle Project. As I, referring to yourself, and my friend entered the venue to hear him speak, after driving past the protesters and the police on mounted horses, we heard in the distance the chant of the protesters, "The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united will never be defeated." What do the workers have to do with Islam? You asked yourself. So, Mark, tell us, with such major differences between the secular left politically and religious Islamists, from issues like the existence of God, they have different views of that, and their worldview is diametrically opposed in so many different ways, their views of morality and homosexuality and women's rights, what is the greater cause that seems to unite the political left and radical Islam despite their big differences?
I think the central cause is my enemy's enemy is my friend. So there's a uniting around the goal of destroying capitalism, particularly as it exists in the West. So this is the idea that America, Britain, and so on are the enemy, and those two forces are united against it.
Where do you see examples of this, obvious examples of this, of these differences being glossed over in favor of just the thing that unites them, taking down the Christian influence, Western freedom market based Western civilization?
Well, a good example is the leftist British politician, George Galloway, who has had a very long, close association with radical Islam. In fact, he's written that it's necessary for what he calls the progressive movement to join with Muslims because they have the same enemy, and he's got a lot of votes from the left in Australia. The party that Muslims will vote for the most would be the Greens, who are the most left, and after that the Labor Party. So there's they clearly understand that their interests are served best by supporting the left, and the more radical, the more they support them.
Mark Durie with us today in the Christian Worldview. He's an Australian pastor and author. We're talking about his speaking tour here in America, and one of his topics has been the partnership of radical Islam with leftist politics. I'm going to read another paragraph from your speech on that topic. You say, Mark, another important reason for the left's support of Islam is that it has a dismissive attitude to religion itself. This is the left. The leftist view is that Islamic religious beliefs are but a symptom of suffering, and when material conditions improve, the religious beliefs will somehow go away. It follows from this view that the best way to moderate the Muslim Brotherhood was to put them in power so they would no longer be oppressed, and then they will become less religious. In sense, what Islam teaches is irrelevant to this worldview, since theology is not the cause for anything at all. Now, this seems really kind of counterintuitive to the way the Christian worldview works, that someone would believe in a religion just because they're victims, they perceive themselves as victims, or they're somehow oppressed. It's what they need to believe in for the bad state of life that they've been dealt. Explain this a little more, Mark, how this actually operates in their mind.
Well, Marx taught that religion was a drug, really, to help people cope with their suffering. And once they were set free from the pain, then that they wouldn't need to take the drug anymore. The drug would disappear. It's a bit inconsistent with the hatred that communist governments have had for people of religion. They've actively persecuted Muslims and Christians and others. But there is the view that religion is sort of on its way out, and as society becomes more enlightened, the need for it, that the crutch will no longer be required. And the result of that is that people on the left often greatly underestimate, in fact completely dismiss, the role of religion. They've forgotten the role of faith in shaping our society. They underestimate the power of faith in Islam. A good example was Bill Clinton, who was speaking about Boko Haram, which killed thousands of Christians and Muslims too in Nigeria. And he said, well, that's because they're poor and they don't have enough economic opportunity. And you know, they talk about religion and everything, calls it rhetoric, but the truth is that it's the poverty that really caused the conflict. So it's not really religion at all. It's lack of opportunity. So it seems bizarre. If you're shaped by a religious worldview and you know how powerful that can be, it seems amazing that people would hold that view, but they do. It's the dominant view amongst many in the elites here.
Yeah, because we as Christians, we understand that we base our faith not just on not some position we find ourselves in life. There are wealthy Christians who are in abject poverty. We base it on history and evidence and archaeology and reason and creation and our conscience and the Word of God. And it's hard to understand how we could perceive someone to believe something just because of the economic situation they're in. Again, Mark Dury with us today on the Christian Worldview. Let's move on to the left's perception of Islam and Islam's perception of itself. Kind of coming off that last question, you say that left-wing lawyer Lynn Stewart, and our listeners may remember her as the lawyer who represented blind Sheikh Abdel Rahman in the 1993 Trade Center bombing case. Lynn Stewart said this about radical Islam: they are basically forces of national liberation. And I think that we, as persons who are committed to the liberation of people, should fasten on the need for self-determination. My own sense is that were the Islamists to be empowered, there would be movements within their own countries. So how is this element, Mark, of victimhood or being oppressed key to understanding the left's perception of Islam and Islam's perception of itself?
Well, intellectuals on the left in the West have taken the view that Muslims have suffered as victims of colonialism and oppression. They emphasize the tyrants in the Middle East and say these are sort of puppets for America and so on. And then the people there are victims, and they identify Islam as a force for freedom. They don't understand that when Islam it becomes dominant in Egypt or in Iran, that actually ordinary people are oppressed by it. It's a religious fanatical minority that often push that really hard, and it becomes an extremely oppressive system. It's been a complete disaster in Iran. I think another thing they don't understand is that Islamic theology promotes the idea of Muslims as victims. I've got many examples of Muslims that have said, oh, you know, we are the victims, and that's become almost like an intense cry. You know, no one else is allowed to be as victimized as us. And that's really hardwired into Islamic theology, the life. It sort of is a perfect storm in the way it partners with the Western preference, the leftist preference for the victim and seeing them as needing to be liberated.
Today, an Australian pastor and author, theologian, author of three books, The Third Choice, Which God and Liberty to the Captives. You can find out more about Mark at his website, markdury.com. Mark, what motivates you as a pastor to speak and write what you do about Islam? And I know you have a big ministry within your church to Iranians in Australia. What's behind this?
I think Islam is a very crippling worldview. It's fundamentally opposed to the gospel. It insulates people against the truth about Jesus and about freedom. It also damages societies. Islamic countries are by and large very underdeveloped there. People suffer a great deal in those societies. Islam is really bad for Muslims on many different levels. And it's also a challenge to the West. It's partnering with the West's damaged worldview and gaining a lot of inroads ideologically, politically. Some countries in the West, as Bernard Lewis has prophesied for Europe, will become Islamic, and that'll be a very painful and destructive process. So yeah, I'm motivated by compassion. I'm motivated by passion for the truth and the need to explain things to people. There's a lot for them to understand.
When you speak to Muslims about the things you've been talking about today, what kind of response do you get? Because the things you say seem like that would be completely offensive to a Muslim. Do they? Some of them see things the way you do? Is there a spiritual blindness that disappears when you give them the truth of the gospel? What do you find?
Muslims vary, and it depends on how embedded they are in the Islamic worldview. The Quran says that Christians are liars, and so there's a tendency to say, I mean, I had one Muslim say to me, oh, you know that the Quran is admitting it. You know, you're a liar. And, you know, all biblical scholars all know that it's false, but they won't really acknowledge it. So that's a very deep level error that they make. On the other hand, I've met lots of Muslims and people leaving Islam who really dislike Islam. And this is happening amongst the Iranians that I've met in Australia. Many of these young people have had more than 30 years of Islamic revolution, and they detest it, to be frank. And, they've said that. One of them said, I hate Islam, you know. And they say, you know, so many of their friends feel the same, that having lived under it all their lives, they have rejected it completely. So those people are incredibly open. In fact, some of them are shocked that we in the West cannot see what seems so obvious to them, that Islam is a destructive worldview.
You're listening to an interview with Mark Dury today here on the Christian Worldview about why the political left and radical Islam are not strange bedfellows. Let's talk, Mark, about how the secular left and radical Islam perceives the future, what they're working towards. You say in your speech, they have the same interest in opposing savage capitalist globalization, which is intent upon homogenizing the entire world. The progressive organizations and movements agree on that with the Muslims. Both political Islam and leftist worldviews have progressive outlooks, believing in the improving effect of history and the perfect world, a utopia that is to come. And you say that political Islam does this by conquering nations and instituting Sharia, believes it can redeem the world that way. Whereas socialism, or the political left's worldview, you say by using state power and force to eliminate wealth and private property, and then they hope to usher in a new millennium. Where do you see in the world, Mark, where they're making the most progress in this utopian vision?
They've made progress Islamists have made progress in societies that have suffered a lot, experienced a lot of oppression, economic difficulties, and they've opportunely been able to take advantage of that to take over power. That happened in Iran in 1979. And it happened in Egypt with the Muslim Brotherhood in a very difficult circumstances in Egypt. The problem for the Islamists is they can't sustain that. The utopia doesn't arrive. And in Iran, it took some decades for people to really deeply turn against Islam. But in Egypt, it happened within a year. They kicked the Muslim Brotherhood out. In those societies where daily life is a life and death issues, people will come to us, they'll reject Islam more quickly, I think. But in the West, where we're more comfortable, these utopian ideals can seem more compelling, and people can be seduced by them. So that's been still quite influential amongst people in the West. I had a young man, I knew a young Australian guy who converted to Islam because he was looking for a radical solution to life's problems, and he thought that in Islam he'd find that. He wanted something really passionate and world-changing and that would bring in the brave new world that he was seeking. So he had a longing for that, and it was the key to his conversion. As it happened later, he discovered it wasn't true, and he left Islam. But for a while, that was really enticing to him.
You quote from Robert Jensen, who is a professor of journalism at the University of Texas, where he said, "The United States has lost the war in Iraq, and that's a good thing. I welcome the U.S. defeat for a simple reason. It isn't the defeat of the United States, its people or their ideals, but of that empire. And it's essential the American empire be defeated and dismantled," unquote. And as an example of someone on the political left who cheers the defeat of Western values, American values abroad. As you look back, Mark, and as you look ahead, do you believe that it was a good policy for the United States to fight the two wars that we fought in Iraq and Afghanistan?
I think that's a very difficult question. I think it was necessary to go into Afghanistan and take out the regime that was hosting the Taliban. I mean, the Taliban hosting Al-Qaeda. And in Iraq, I think Saddam Hussein really trapped himself by claiming all these grandiose ambitions to be so lethal. I can understand why America went in. I supported those activities. But the problem is the allies in Iraq and also in Afghanistan were completely ill-equipped to manage a situation. And the result is they've promoted Islam, right, in effect. That's what local Christians believe in Iraq, and I think they're right. So Iraq, before the engagement, had a secular constitution, basically, and today it's a Sharia constitution. Islam, radical Islam, has progressed enormously. Most of the Christians have fled Iraq. So the outcome has been really disastrous. And I think that's not so much the problem of going in. It's the problem of having no coherent plan for dealing with being there. And that's caused by misunderstanding the nature of Islam itself, being in profound denial about what they're dealing with. There was a view that all these nations just want Western democracy, but they don't have the worldview to sustain Western democracy.
No, we haven't seen that in historical evidence for that. Mark Dury with us today in the Christian Worldview, an Australian pastor and author of several books. You can find out more about him at his website, markdury.com. Dury is spelled D-U-R-I-E, markdury.com. Now, Mark, let's say the secular left and radical Islam achieve their objective of taking down the Christian-influenced, free-market-based Western civilization. Who would then take control between these two entities?
Very likely the Islamists. In Iran, the Russians invested a lot in the revolution in 1979, and they thought it was a people's revolution and a communist society would result. They were shocked when all their people were killed, and they couldn't understand why they'd lost. I think the radical Islam understand the communists better than the communists understand the Islamists. So it's like the two allies will fight eventually, but one side is blind to the other, and you can't protect yourself if you're fighting blind. And so communism, because it denies Islam as a real force, constantly underestimates it.
One of your other speeches that you've been speaking on here in America, you've been in several cities across the country. It's entitled "How to Renounce Islam, the Iranian Harvest, and the Coming Mission Tsunami." And you mentioned that this address discusses the turning of 1 million Iranians to Christian faith in recent decades and signs of other people groups turning away from Islam. That's what that speech is about. Tell us about the situation in Iran spiritually. They've been in the news a lot recently where you say Muslims are becoming Christians, but there's also a dynamic of Christian persecution going on there. What is going on in Iran?
Well, there's a lot of underground churches, and people are rejecting Islam. They're seeking after all sorts of spiritual alternatives, including Zoroastrianism, but many are turning to Christ. And the number of Christians who've left Islam in Iran have gone from, say, 379 to estimated to be as much as 1 million today in Iran and around the world. I think the government's very anxious about that. The problem for them, however, is not just the Christians, but the general rejection of the authority of Islam in society. So they're clamping down on Christians and on pastors as in response to that anxiety. I think their anxiety will only increase. You've got a whole nation of people, most of whom are unwilling to support the Islamic project there. I believe this is the beginning of a process that will begin to move like a wave across the Muslim world. And even now, in Egypt and in the Middle East, there's increased criticism of Islam from Muslims in the wake of the Muslim Brotherhood's failures and the conflict in Syria and what's happening in Iraq. They can only blame the West for that so long. I think there'll be great opportunities, because when people are spiritually hungry and they reject Islam, they need to find an alternative. They need to find God. And atheism is only going to work for a few. So I see a period of incredible opportunity for the gospel, and many great challenges too. So very much passionate on my heart is to be ready for the opportunities that are to come.
And what do you think about from a political standpoint with Iran, with our president here in America, President Obama, the lifting of sanctions versus towards that country when they've threatened to obviously destroy Israel? They're thought to be developing a nuclear weapon, and they've threatened to even use that. What do you make of the impact of those sanctions and the way we're dealing with Iran right now?
Well, I think Obama takes the view that people act up badly because they get denied opportunity, and colonialism is the fault of everything. So if America's only nice to all these people and doesn't say nasty things about them, they'll all become good and decent, and the hatred of Israel is just a symptom, like religions, of their poverty and their need. So, you know, you embrace the Muslim world and then we'll all be happy together. So it's incredibly naive and fundamentally flawed worldview. It reminds me of the appeasement of Nazi Germany, really, before the Second World War. What's happened is the U.S., by supporting utopian groups like the Muslim Brotherhood and even being more open to Iran, has lost credibility in the Middle East. It's lost influence. It's lost the capacity to have any role there. So Obama's wish that America would disengage and withdraw is being granted. And the result will be very painful, I think, because America's influence, by and large, has been positive as a force for some stability in the Middle East.
All right, you're listening to an interview with Mark Dury today on why the political left and radical Islam are not strange bedfellows. What do you see? You talked about opportunity for the gospel, for people to be saved out of Islam to biblical Christianity in the Middle East, in the midst of all this turmoil and the Arab Spring and the revolutions that have taken place and the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the persecution going on in Iran. What do you encourage just the average Christian listening in America today to somehow participate, or how can they participate in this kind of evangelization on another part of the world where it's such a different culture? There's such persecution towards Christians. What are we supposed to do?
Well, some will experience Muslims coming to their church or seeking out for Christ in their local communities, as we have in Melbourne, and just encourage them to be bold in reaching out to them. I think Christians do have a responsibility to inform themselves about Islam and to be aware of the strategies that are at work. I think you need to support your local government representatives if they're willing to stand up for truth. There's a deeper issue of our lack of conviction about our own identity, about the influence of Christian faith and public life. We need a renewed vision for a country that's shaped by the Bible's values. And I think we need to stop letting ourselves be entertained and focus on forming and strengthening our Christian values in our society.
That's a good word to end on, Mark, and we appreciate all you're doing. You're speaking, you're writing, you're preaching your books on this topic. Informing people about Islam is such an important first step, but also compelling them to action, to be strong in their faith, and to live out their Christian faith in a culture that often opposes it. So we wish you all of God's best as you continue here speaking in America, and we're thankful you came back on the program today.
Thank you, David. It's been great to be with you.